Well, very good evening to you, and thank you for tuning into Terrace Talk here on Radio Kerry this evening. Donal Barry with you until 8 o'clock. And on tonight's show, we'll talk all things Senior County Championship Hurling, with some of the men, of course, who have been there and done that. Now, our women in sports featured, that's kicking off at 7:30. We're catching up with Grace Lynch there. She, of course, is a Ivara EC athlete, a fantastic athlete as well. We'll begin to hear her story there, thanks to Joe McGill. But let's start this evening with a comment that came in very early today. Big congratulations to the Kerry minor football team, who secured their place in the All-Ireland semi-final with their 5-point win over Kildare on Saturday. Absolutely, and so say all of us. And of course, sets themselves up for a clash with Monaghan on June the 24th. And of course, they're captained, of course, by Ballyduff's Evan Boyle, and that links our show nicely to season because we're talking all things hurling. And of course, Boyle's is a big hurling name out in Ballyduff, and of course in North Kerry as well. Now, what are your memories of the Senior County Championship here in Kerry? Who are the greats? What team stood out for you? The great finals, can you remember them? Were you part of them actually? Did you play them the whole lot? Man coming in here now, James. They said do nothing live on radio. Come in here and sit down.
That's six and a half fellas for you.
After taking off the sunglasses.
Fair play. Good, so fair play. We'll need a better security guard in the door, Ivan. So anyway, give us a call. Call Ivan there on 066-712-3666, or text us there or WhatsApp us on 083-300 to be part of the show. But before we get down to hurling this evening, we want to turn just for a quick few minutes over to our friends in Calnafirsty, because next Sunday the 18th of June sees the first Slough and Mid-Rowing Regatta of 2023, and it takes place of course in Calnafirsty, with a 10 race programme on the cards of course, and it'll be the first time for the new boats and everybody to get back into the water, and it's great. And joining of course on the line now is JP O'Sullivan back there in Calnafirsty. JP, are you all excited about next Sunday?
Yeah, we are looking forward to the storm and famous, all the crews have been out training hard there over the last couple of months, and whatever sport you're involved in, whether it is football or soccer or rowing, what you need to get out, like in football, into the game, and in rowing you need to test your skill against all the other crews from the different clubs around the county.
Of course it's great to be the lead regatta of the year, the first regatta of the year. Is there a bit of pressure getting it all together, or at this stage, I suppose you're old hens back there in Calnafirsty, you have everybody in place and knowing what to do, but it still takes a bit of work to get it organised, JP?
Yeah, there's a lot of work involved in fairness, from putting down the boys and putting down the starting boys and the rounding boys, and you know, on the day of the regatta itself, collecting the road and helping with the car park and manning the shop and sorting out the boats and trailers at the pier. Like, but yeah, it's all part and parcel of the day, really. Like, in fairness, there's a fantastic club here at the moment. Like, there's no shortage of volunteers, and we have, at this point in time, there's 110 members in the club.
It's a lot of people, fair play to you. And of course, the regatta takes place below in Ballycasan Pier. That's your old haunt, isn't it?
Yeah, the regatta takes place in Ballycasan Pier, and the draw for the boys is at 4 p.m. and the boat race is at 7:15. And you know yourself about the sandboat race. It's something spectacular, really. Like, it's a moment, the boat and the cocks, and going for up to 30 minutes. And hopefully on Sunday there could well be up to 6 sandboats taking part between Sneem, Valencia, Cass Irene, Cardano, Banner, Skillings and come on. So it's a sight to see, really, but you know, and there's great interest, and it has stood the test of time, that race, in fairness, and it's a fantastic spectacle.
Yeah, absolutely. 12 people inside the boat, and the cocks of course 13 people, and like you said, to have 5 or 6 of them competing, and particularly the first regatta of the year as well. Of course, the one thing, JP, over the years, a lot of younger races, you know, you cater for the boys and the girls now as well, and there's a lot of training goes on with that as well.
There is one, and I think myself, as I've said to you before on a number of occasions, the coastal rowing is a sport, it's very much a family sport, like, because at the start, you know, people, parents might bring their kids to training, like, and they see that as an opportunity for themselves to take part in races up along the line, over 35, over 45, over 55, so a lot of them become very involved, and to the great sport, and to the very tough sport, in fairness. But coming back to that point, I was on the trail crews and all them, soon there'll be a big day for Rotherdin now, because it'll be their first day out, like, and you know, they'll be a bit nervous, like, but when the race starts, they'll get into it and they'll enjoy it, like, and that's what they've been putting the training in for along, like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And when does it all I was going to say kick off, but kick off is the wrong term, it's the first shot, isn't it? Usually you have a shot to start the regatta. What time does it get underway, JP?
It's 4 p.m. the draw for the boys on, and at 7:15 is the sandboat race.
Fair play.
So I don't think there should be any excuses in Sunday, because the Kerry and Louth game will be win over at that stage. So everyone should head down to Benefit Town here and have some exciting race and looking forward to a great year's sport, really.
Fair. Well, hopefully, JP, just figuratively, the Kerry Louth game will be over and they'll have another game to look forward to. JP, final question for you. Did you ever do a bit of hurling?
No, I did one time in Canada, no, set in the side.
All right, okay.
I could have done a lot, yeah, sure. That was took for some Philander coming into goals.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and I put in the first couple of the puck outside, wished the ball completely, but sure, we had no big set. But I tell you what, we went down to win it anyway, that was the most important thing.
Oh, fair play to you. Obviously, weren't playing in the Arcari crowd anyway.
I just like to wish all the clubs taking part next Sunday the very best of luck for Sunday and for the rest of the season. And another one point I'd say to you, I hope the weather is better than last year, because it never stopped raining from start to finish. And everyone was there, absolutely soaked.
Well, we'll pray for fine weather and
we're hoping for the man above. He looked down us on Sunday and give us a fine day.
Jesus, fair play. You're good for prayers back there in Calnafirsty. All right. Listen, JP, thanks for joining us this evening. Of course, that is the Calnafirsty Rowing Club. They're holding the regatta, of course, next Sunday. The draw for boys, of course, is 4 p.m. And the same boat race is that's the highlight of the evening at 7:15. But 10 races in between as well. And as JP rightly said, a lot of under 12s taken to the water for the first time. So a lot of parents going to be supporting them. And it's great to see that. And it's fantastic. Now, the Garvey Super Value Senior Hurling Championship will puck off, of course, next Friday evening at Austin Sack Park, when Ballyhaig take on last year's beaten finalist Ballyduff. And it's the first of three games at the weekend as it really gets underway. But it'll be the beginning of a journey, I suppose, that we'll see one team capture the Neil's Flynn Cup, and I suppose in many ways write their own piece of history as they become the latest players to win a senior county hurling championship medal. Now, it's one of the hardest medals to win, I've been told, in Kerry sport. Such is the competition and the tradition of hurling in the county. And despite what people from outside the county think of hurling at the times, it is held in huge regard within the county. So what's it like to win one of them? What's it like to win a few of them? What's it like to win eight of them, maybe? Well, I'm delighted to say that we've assembled a panel over the next hour and a half of former players who, I suppose, between them can reveal some of the answers to those questions. And tonight we decided to look back, I suppose, before we look forward to this year's championship, and maybe try and capture some of the moments that probably helped inspire, I suppose, some of those talking off in this year's edition of what really is Kerry's toughest competition. I'm delighted to be joined James McCarthy, our own James McCarthy, of course, you'll hear him. And Sean Flaherty, the man who just walked straight into the live studio. Much like he played, I'd imagine, James.
In and out. He didn't see him coming. You wouldn't see him coming.
Well, we didn't see him coming. Anyway, straight in. Come here, we started with you, Sean. Describe, before we get into talk about Lixna and winning in 83 and 85 and all those things, what was it like to win it? What was it like to get it off your back? I mean, you were the guys that came on the back and stopped Causeway from winning five. I mean, did you know you were causing much damage at the time when you were stopping them?
I don't know about that, Donald, but I suppose being from Lixna prior to 1983, we'd only won two championships and had been beaten in a lot of finals and things like that, but that's no good show. But I suppose the first final that I really remember was 1966. It's probably an unforgettable one in that Ballyduff beat Lixna had Tom Bond McCarthy sent off, and there was a bit of mayhem afterwards and things like that. And that had been Lixna's first final with a few years. And then we were the next bunch to come on the way, and we made the final of 82. And I suppose 16 years without making an appearance in the final, like, there was definitely a weight on the back. And I suppose we had opened the field that year, officially opened the field. We did a big job on the field. And I suppose when you do a job like that, there's great community spirit. And the GAA is the one organisation. It embodies all that. And everybody comes around the GAA, the local team involved. And this was a big occasion for us. But it probably came too soon for us, in that our focus was probably on the opening of the pitch, having a good year. And we met a fantastic Causeway team in the final night, and look, if we had John Kiley and Paul Kinnock with us, we wouldn't have beaten that Causeway team that year, and we probably wouldn't have prepared properly. To get to the final was the thing for us at the time. But I suppose, look, it's like everything else, if you don't learn from that, you're going no place in the game. And I suppose, look, monkey see, monkey do, we saw what cars were doing. So we said, look, next year we're going to be prepared for these guys. And we were.
Mm-hmm. So we. What were cars were doing at the time that stood them out in particular? I mean, you're looking over the shoulder, you're seeing them in three, four in a row. Is it fitness? Is it, I don't know, strength and conditioning was hardly a thing back in those days. But what were they doing that they excelled them?
Look, they were ahead of the pack in that they had 15 good hurdlers. Like, they hadn't a weak link. Whereas other clubs at the time, you'd be sticking your foot in here and saying, look, he might do a job for us. And I think he probably wouldn't do it when he came to it. But that's what you were hoping for, because they didn't have that weak link. But we probably ambushed them in, they beat us in 82 in the final, but 83 we said, look, actually in 82 we were beaten in one final. One game we were beaten, the county final. We won our leagues, we won everything. And typical, of course, what happened, our three selectors got dumped at the AGM.
They got the vote of confidence,
The players weren't to blame at all. Like, it was the selectors because we didn't win the county final. Selectors dumped.
And the corner forward.
Yeah. So, anyway, but we decided then that, look, we're going to have a right cut at it the next year. So, cars we were playing, I think it was Abidorn in the first round, and we were playing Ballyheig. So we said, what we'll do is, hoping, of course, and thinking that we would beat Ballyheig, is we're going to video Carswell's game. And this was when they saw Carswell's game being videoed. They thought it was Carswell that were doing it themselves.
But, all right, okay.
But we videoed the game in here, and but we barely got out of jail. Ballyheig was leading us 5 points with about 3 minutes to go, and we came back and we got a goal and 3 points, and we won by a point. And God be good to John Joe Sullivan, who was the Lord Mayor of Ballyheig, like it, unofficially. But John Joe was mad into the hurling, like, and all that year, like, he was the local correspondent for the Notes and the Kerryman. And when we won, it was a case of, Lixnair won our championship, he said. We picked our players, we did the right matchup for Carswell, and we were up 2-10 outside the 4 points at half time, and Carswell were going for 5 in a row.
Yeah. Speaking about the video, I mean, I presume that was kind of a unique enough thing to do at the time, was it, you know, to video and go back and watch a game?
It was. But look, the way we felt, look, if you always do what you always did, you always get what you always did. Mm-hmm. But that was our motto, like, that we had to do something. If we approached Carswell the same as we did the previous year, we'd no chance. So we switched our team around, and we had the surprise element, and we were up 272 points after, I'd say, 15-16 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that put them under pressure, like, they couldn't come back after that. But look, had we not done that, we wouldn't have beaten them, because in fairness, they were a superb team.
They were a massive team. We have one of them appearing around the corner now very shortly, and we'll see, will you be as honest as you are now?
I would say, suppose, in relation to that, like, we were looking too unfortunate in that we had a trainer at the time, like, he was chairman of the club as well, Frank Thornton, and Frank, he was a visionary, like, and he could cajole fellas and he'd get the best out of them, and he knew who to hype up, and he knew who to calm down. And if you wanted to train, if you were feeling a bit tired on the night, if you said it to Frank, no problem. Like, he was a player's man, he was a player's manager. Like, it was a trainer that time, it's manager now, but he was very good. Mm-hmm. He had a great way with him, and he still has to this day. I hope he's listening, and he wouldn't be expecting these words from me, like, but he was very good, in fairness to him.
After how many, 50 years later, you tell him he's very good, isn't
it? Took a long time.
We couldn't tell him before now.
he'll
think it's old age now.
probably didn't think you said it at all. Come here to me, something else unique with yourself, of course, apart from Lixnair winning in 83 and you won again in 85. I'm doing my history now fairly well, but your father won 10.
Yeah, my father did. My father won 10 with Crata. Like,
do they count now with Crata?
You see, the problem is that if your father plays with a team and then you play with a different team, I suppose you always go in and you want to beat that team.
Right, okay.
And that's the psyche, like. Yeah. But
10 is amazing.
Yeah, he captained them 4 times.
Yeah. So, like, Crata were flying in the 40s, like, I mean, they were gathering for fun,
yeah,
really.
And they were very hard to beat in finals. When they got into finals, they invariably won them. They won, I think it was a Crata that won 8 of them, and it was the Pierces, I think, it was a Crata Kilflynn combination,
yes,
or something like that.
They
won 2. But it was unique, like, to win so many in such a short space of time.
And of course, you passed the winning gene to your son.
Yeah, I'd only the one son, only the one, but he won four then afterwards.
Did he get four?
Yeah, he got four. So
so he was twice as good as you and your father was five times.
You're
well,
in the middle, see, so.
Well, see, when I'm 85, I'd be a great player. But the older you get, the better you get, like, it's always the case, isn't it?
Come here, speaking about great players, there's a man beside you. You bought Captain Kerry, did you?
Yeah.
Fair play to you. That's a big compliment. And you both played for Kerry, and of course you both saw your teams win county championships. James, you have eight.
Eight, yeah.
You couldn't find them this evening.
You were laughing earlier. They are in the tin in the loft. My wife keeps telling me, bring them down. We have to do something with them. I said, I will, when I finish playing. That's my excuse.
You say it's senior championship medals and they're in the loft.
It's not the middle.
No.
It's the Kilmaine.
The first one was up in the mantelpiece for years. Yeah. But then, thankfully, they started gathering and they can't keep eight little loose ones there. But like Shawnee says, your first one, you do have to change your mentality. You have to find, you've got to learn how to win. We didn't know, and probably Lixnaw themselves when they did that video, right, how do we actually win this final? What do we need to change in our psyche, maybe change in our makeup, change in the way we do our team, change positionals? Like, we were lucky enough, like the lads at Frank Tartan, we had probably John Myler came in with us, and just the outlook was different. Mm-hmm. There was a different setup, and he saw things in players saying, I know, like I played most of my first few years and we didn't win championships as a forward. I failed miserably, but then I was converted to a back. But now I'm getting older, I'm back and forwards again. So,
of course, that's an interesting point, because obviously I think Jesus James McCarthy played his first one and he won one. But you lost a good few before you won.
Oh, an awful lot. Yeah, yeah. I started, like, it's probably sad now, but this is my 30th year playing senior hurling. I played when I was 18 back in 93. So that was my first year. And what a baptism I got. I was running around after Brendan Sullivan, who was one of the best players in Kerry at the time, and best players we've had in Kerry for a long number of years, and Bellahagen, their pomp. So I said I didn't even touch it. I didn't even see the ball. I saw Brendan Sullivan, his bootlaces, and that's all I saw. Nothing else. He was just gone. And after that, we lost a lot right up to 2001, and then we kind of got a run. Like, that was our first year. Like, we won matches, yes, but we never got over the line.
Yeah,
we were always beaten maybe by a pint, 2 pints here and there. We were never destroyed, but just didn't, whatever it was, maybe there was players enough there, good enough, just didn't know how to win.
Speaks about the first win, so, because I mean, 71, you won, and I had those guys on one night, and they celebrated that fantastic. Of course, they beat Abby Dorney, who are coming in around the corner to us now quite shortly. But speaks about the first one, getting to the final first, James, maybe. Can you remember?
Get the final, exactly, because we got to a semi final one year and thought we were. I said, great, we're on a chance here. We actually met Causeway, and Causeway beat us. And the danger was, and the problem was, maybe like Shawnee said earlier, we went and watched them in their quarter final, and they were terrible. Came into the semi final, they blew us away. Just blew us away. We had no answer for them. I can be honest about it and say, we got a couple of scores back in the end, but they were always a better team. They were better than us. And that kind of knocked us back a bit. But then when Myler came in, we kind of gathered ourselves again, gathered a few players. We had a good mix.
Was Myler a big name back at that time, or was he just coming on the scene?
He was. You know, he was with Kerry when they beat Watford. So, like, he was known. And, like, he probably didn't know much about Kilmaley himself. And it was Joe Wells and Christy Wells brought him into our club and said, like, come down, see what's going on. Like, and see, can you do something for us? And that's basically what it is. Can you do something for us, really? Because at that stage, we were kind of like, we need something here. We need a head doctor. We need something. Something's got to change here, because it's not happening. We had 30 years. It's an awful drought, like Shawnee talking about. Yeah, the drought, and you can feel it. And actually, just like Shawnee said about the field, we actually developed our field in 2001 as well. It was just such a coincidence. Shawnee said it now. We spent huge money and huge time and people in the club, and everyone was around it, and the whole club lifted, and this man came in and lifted further. And so the whole thing was, we were actually on a high, and just lucky enough I got over Ballyhale in the final by 1 point. That very good Ballyhale team that had won the championships during the 90s, like, in fairness, they had been champions the year before as well in 2000. So we were lucky to get over the line that day. But once you win the first one, then boom, it's like you turn on a switch. You now know how to win. And we carried on for 4 in a row then. It was excellent. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then I suppose we were beaten.
Don't be showing off. Four is enough. We'll talk to you in 4 seconds. We'll take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
On Terrace Talk, I tell you one thing, it's like a dressing room a Conning Championship weekend or something. That we've been joined by two more. James McCann's been shoved over to the corner because nobody likes to show off with eight County Championship medals. But I'm delighted to be joined by Paddy Walsh, Causeway, four in a row team. And he's won another sneaky one, which we'll talk about in a second. And we'll talk about the sneaky one first, because that's quite important, because Abbey Dorney are the Division 1 champions. They're coming in with a good bit of form. The last time they won, though, was 1974. I'm delighted to have the captain, Tony Behan. Does it feel like 1974?
Not really. You know. But I couldn't match the last speaker there, who is playing for 30 years.
That's right, yeah. Ah, well, he was hanging around for 30 years. I mean,
playing is a kind of loose term, I suppose. Yeah.
Talk to us about 74. Well, actually, go back to 71 first, because maybe Dorney were in that final. Kilmiley pinched it off him, and maybe lead on to 74.
We had a very good team in 71. We actually had a team at least as good as 74, I think, in 71. And Kilmiley came up kind of the back door, I think, at the time. I think they played, did they play junior or
junior
something?
Junior first, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So we kind of underestimated those a small bit. But then Declan Lovett was playing with him, like, at the time, and I mean, you couldn't underestimate any team he was playing with. We lost it, and we were feeling terrible after losing it, because most of us thought this was the last chance. We had a good few fellas who were well up around the 30 mark at the time, and obviously they were feeling that it was their last chance. So when we got a shot at it again in 74, we were pretty determined to win it that time, and we would have been much more ruthless in 74 than we were in 71, because it was definitely the last the last stand, you know. And that was a good final with in 71. We could have won it. We probably should have won it. We didn't.
Yeah.
And we were still thinking the last championship we won before that was in 1913. Yeah, and the two before that were back in the 1800s.
Yeah. It's amazing to think that you've only won four, and the one that you won in 74, it ended a 61-year wait for one. Like, which is, my God, seems lifetime. 74, unusual enough, you played Austin Sachs in the final.
We did. Well, we really won the county championship, I think, in the quarterfinal. We beat a fabulously good Ballyduff team at that time. They were after winning the championship, I think, the year before, and they had John O'Grady back with them at this stage, and Ogie Moran was playing the same day as well. It was the only match I think he played with Ballyduff, and he was a very, very good hurler. And we beat them in an extremely tough match in Austin Dax Park. And, you know, once we beat them, we felt that we had a good chance of winning it. But, you know, we went on, we did win it.
Yeah.
It was fabulous to win it.
We'll come back and talk about the winning of it after. But, of course, the man beside you played some small part in that game as well. Is it in 74?
That's in 71, no.
Oh, no, but in 74.
That's why they didn't win it. Oh. That explains that part.
We have the reason. Write it down.
You weren't old enough.
I played up to the final, but I was dropped for the final.
Oh, controversial.
And
rightly dropped, wrongly dropped. Rightly dropped.
Well, I was dropped. I came on as a forward, actually.
Yeah.
But it was too late. They were expecting too much from me.
There was no three goals in the locker.
Well, we went to 74, and I suppose, you know, you met the likes of Niall Sheehy was after.
Oh, playing, yeah.
Peyton Crossley, I'm Peyton now. He got two goals, was it?
He did, yeah.
And he was playing the backs. He started in the backs. He came down the forwards.
He did.
But he started in the forwards against us. But he got no goal that year. And I think the funny incident about that game is, in the latter end, we were up 8-9 points, I suppose. And I was going out with the ball, and Niall tapped me in the ankle. Cute. So I was passing back into the goals, and I said, "You want to be careful where you're hitting." And he put his hand up my head, and he said, "Listen, young man," he said, "I played in pitches where you wouldn't believe paid into if you paid." So he put me back in my pitch.
he put you back in your corner. But of course, you went on to win it. And then, unusually enough for you, because I'll jump from your connection to Causeway. You kind of went home, did you? You went back home, or did you not go home, or did you move home, or you move out of home?
I was living in Causeway.
Oh, yes, yeah. Okay. Very, very cleverly answered. But you were part of the four in a row team.
Yeah.
I mean, coming into that Causeway team, obviously we spoke to the boys about winning their first one. Can you remember the first one with Causeway on that run?
I can remember 78 as well, where we were robbed by a referee. Newcastle West.
You got no free, was a few minutes ago.
No, we got actually, just wasn't that. We got three goals, and he allowed the goals. He allowed the player to go forward with the ball. He got three goals, and then he gave, just allowed the goal, and gave frees instead.
Oh,
and we were beaten 9-6.
All right, tight enough.
So, like, then 79.
It all like, fell together like, in 79, free, didn't it?
The what?
It all fell together in 79, free.
Yeah. Well, there was I feel that it was the best team that ever represented. We came out of Kerry.
Okay.
Every one of them played with Kerry Lee. Everyone, the team, that him, they all played with Kerry. Modestly, he was training us, like a great trainer. Same with this fellow training us, Nebby Dorn. And they got great respect from the players, like, and he went down from there.
Yeah. Like, to win four in a row, and James has won four in a row as well, I mean, like, you kind of must keep the team bond good, obviously, and keep yourself strong, and there's no falling out, or there's no fellas fighting with each other. Or is it the way that fellas are so competitive?
If we don't have fighting, we'll win our match.
I was just going to say, that's part of it. That is part of it.
I was fighting in our training, mate.
Yeah. And is that fighting with fellas kind of coming on, looking to take your place, because it's kind of a winning team?
Oh, no, just
good belting.
Yeah.
Do you have good belting?
Preparing, fellas. You kind of, we always said, you get them used to it. You're not going to get a soft inside in Stacks. So why should you give them soft in your own pitch?
Exactly.
Just because they're on your own team.
Yeah. Do you take a soft next now?
I don't know.
Actually, you weren't too soft because you stopped the four in a row team for winning five.
We did. And as I said earlier, like that.
We have been better.
It was a great team too, and it was great satisfaction seeing Paddy going back to the net picking it out, because he was picking it out now, in fairness to him.
He scored goals in there.
We did, Paddy.
did you hate the ball going past you, Paddy?
Of course you did.
Yeah.
I think this would be a downer, a goalkeeper is either a hero or a villain.
Yeah. There's no in between, really. You don't have an average game, you have a great game, or you made a mistake.
You're either a villain or a hero.
Yeah. Tony, talk to us about the heroes of 74, and let's go back to Abby Dorney, because I suppose while I'm drilling down Abby Dorney, is that you haven't won since 74.
Uh-huh.
You're in the middle of a drought, but it's not a drought because you didn't win from 61 years previous to that. But yet you produced loads of great hurlers in between and over the time, and it is a hurling, country too.
It is, like, we've had some very good hurlers in between. People like, I suppose, Nicholas Scollard would be one of them.
Walker. Rashton's and Aldi.
All those, yeah. Yeah, they were very good hurlers. Dermot Connor and Jerome Donovan and fellas like that as well, you know, nearer to our time. They were playing in 71, they weren't playing in 74. In 74, I suppose, well, Tom Lyons got the player of the year anyway, that time. And whether he deserved it that year or not was one thing, but he certainly deserved it overall because he was, the outstanding player in Abby Dorney. He didn't have a wonderful year in 74 because he was ill for quite a bit of it. Brendan Keane was a beautiful hurler, absolutely, purist, as good as you'd find in any county. James, I suppose my cousin James Behan, he was very, very good. Well, this was their friend, Francie Dillon, had come on at that stage, and he played with Kerry quite a lot afterwards.
Yeah, Jack, yeah.
And the Jack Condon, sure, Jack, we couldn't forget Jack. Jack got three goals in the county final. He actually got four, and one was disallowed. And he got them all in about the first 10 minutes. And he, for the rest of his life, he boasted that he, that he just didn't win one county championship. He said he won 25, one for every one of the
youth. Oh, yeah.
So we're playing in the team. And again, he said, if the long fella, who was Tom Carney, playing full forward, Tom Carney was about 6'3", Jack was about 5 feet, if the long fella had come out of his way, he said he had a fourth one and maybe even a fifth one, And he said this until the day he died, And he was a lovely hurler, a very good hurler, and he was real wiry, like, about 5 feet tall.
I don't think he had the ball in his hand once in the 74 county final.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled in everything, like.
Wow.
And if he was out before you for the ball, Yeah. He'd wait and come out.
He would.
He'd say hello to you.
Yeah. He would say hello to you too. He's dead. Yeah. Lord have mercy on him. Visited him a few times when he was in, you know, in home. And, you know, he wouldn't really talk to you unless you talked about all the fellas he knocked out during his life. And I can remember at least two occasions, you know, when he knocked people out and the throw in, you know. So I played centre field for a couple of years with him.
He kept his notches on his...
He did.
Come here to me. Winning 74 and going back to Abbeydorney after winning it. I mean, like, David Turty, your weight, he had a long enough weight as well.
29, yeah.
But going back, like...
That was fantastic, of course.
What's it like? I mean, your parents, your friends, your brothers, your cousins, your neighbours?
Well, it just wasn't that the team had a good spirit. There was a great spirit in the whole community. And I remember going back in with a cup up and sitting up in the bonnet of somebody's car. It's good in my own car. You could sit in bonnets that time because they were strong and they were dinted anyway, so it didn't make much difference, you know. And it was a great time, it was fabulous. And talking about winning championships, if you win one, you could win a couple. I think, we could have won the following year if we just had the same desire to win. If we'd won a 71, we wouldn't have won a 74. Let's put it that way. We wouldn't have the same...
You'd be all retired.
We probably would, yeah.
You got your one and got...
And we'd be still celebrating, which happened too, you know.
Sean, 83 winning with Lixnow. What was the celebrations like then?
It was absolutely crazy because all I remember the local publican, Bill O'Connor, Billine as we used to call him, God be good to him, he's gone now as well. But he started complaining after three nights that all the drink he brought in for Christmas was all gone. So it was 3 days and three nights in his bar, and then we started moving out for another 4 or 5 nights. But it was a week solid. And then who got married? Pat McMahon got married at the end of the week. And that was the first one.
You only had my wadi then, is it?
Moss McKenna was his best man, and Moss's eye was black closed because he had been in the wars with Joe Welsh from Kilmaidy in the county final. Oh. and when he went to war with Joe, like, you were going to come out with him after. Anyway.
Was Moss captain, was he?
Moss's captain, yeah. Moss's captain.
And you had another Moss in 85?
Moss Island in 85 then, and that was, Moss Luke was a local derby, and for Lixnow people, it was, we'd waited 29 years and they were delighted that we won the one. But if we had lost the Crat in the county final, then we could have caught the middles, I'd say, and turned them into the River Brickhead, say, because there'd be nothing taught to them. But and it, local derby like Lixnow Crat, it was tribal warfare. Yeah. But thankfully we came out to the right side of it. That day now Todd was superb for Crat as well, Todd Nolan, God be good to him as well. And I suppose one of those things that happened, which was a rare thing, after county finals, some of the Crater players came down to Lixnow on the Monday night, and the Lixnow players caught Todd out in the middle of the street and took him up on their shoulders into the local bar.
Wow.
Which it was lovely to see, like, the match was over and we were all friends after the match.
Yeah. Come here to me, James McCarthy, rivalry. There's some teams you meet an awful lot and you're playing them all over the place, so some teams you probably don't meet as much. Kilmiley, who are the team that you say, God, we have to win this one?
I suppose you look at Causeway at the minute, between Causeway and Kilmiley, we've won the last four. We've won two and Causeway won two, and it's... But I kind of, the way I've always looked at it, and have always looked at it since I started playing, is Ballyduff. They were my benchmark. Now, no disrespect to any other club, but when we won the four in a row, if we didn't beat Ballyduff, they would have won four in a row. And that's the way because they were that good. Paddy, the lads will tell you, they were that good. There wasn't a puck of a ball between us. Like, so it's you have to gauge yourself of someone. Like, there, that's why they have 20, 25 titles. We have 26 at the minute. Like, you just want to hate.
Well, you remember that.
I had to throw that in, but that's not a cut-off team either. That's why they're up there.
Yeah.
You're a good team. You're not up on top of the table for being a bad team. Mm-hmm. But like, we're always been accused of being a bit arrogant. You've heard that before. Like, but it's, you go into a game, if you don't think you can go in and win, stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've asked you like that, just don't, and whatever's got to be done. That's my attitude. Whatever's got to be done on the field, and you walk off, like the lads will tell you, you walk off, and like Paddy's isn't training, you'll kill a fella, whatever, and you have a few clatters off each other, and that's it. The field is there, the white lines are there, walk off, take off your helmet, put on your hurling, away you go. Mm-hmm. Go home.
Paddy Causeway, who were the fellas you had to beat?
Who do I?
Who were the fellas you had to beat?
Ballyduff.
Okay. I think Ballyduff are going to get a lot of love here tonight.
We beat them in 81 final.
Yeah.
With 14 men for the most of the game. And for the first time, Ballyduff were beaten the final, since 1955.
Mm-hmm. Wow. 55 was amazing because they were the first team. I don't know if they were the first team to win the county championship, but they were the first team that went out of Kerry, and they represented Munster, and they won the All-Ireland in 1891 or something like that, right? But the guest thing about it,
that was before our time,
it was we were reading the books rather than writing them that time. But the one thing about it is that they had to wait till 1955 to win their second one.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. So they had a huge
long time
for a team that went out and won the All Ireland for Kerry, and they had the history and the culture and the whole lot.
If we go back to 1974, it was Ogie Moran that actually won it for us, because we had an illegal player,
right? Okay,
and they'd have objected to us, and we counter objected to Ogie Moran, and Ogie Moran was playing minor football at Kerry, so they couldn't.
The player we had he was from Kilkenny. He was a young fella working in Epidorney. He had played Kilkenny minor the year before. I wouldn't classify him as being illegal.
He could hurl like.
Well, I mean, he was okay. He was good. He was worth his place.
He was black and amber anyway. He was black and amber.
He was worth his place. But actually, we had Donald Deedy for the same place the same year, and he had played in the 71 final in that position. Pat Tracy was the guy's name. Nice hurler. He was most valuable at training, in that he kind of did something to ease us from playing backs and forwards, or playing it the wrong way around. We were knocking chips off each other playing backs and forwards, you know, and it wasn't useful to us for hurling. I was watching a couple of matches that we'd only played in the last couple of weeks, and you know, at half time, even the fellas down numbers 28 and 29, two fellas standing out in the field like, and they're lashing the ball to each other and they're catching it and sending it back, and you know, they're well able to hit the ball now. We wouldn't have to hit the ball at all. I remember we played Killarney in 1 year, and they had put the goalie
Johnny Cullity
full back, and he used to take about four pucks of the ball to get the ball up to Johnny Cullity, but he'd send it back down to us in one. You know, he was a very, very good hurler.
Wow.
Yeah. Excellent hurler, and but he was well able to strike the ball. We had a few fellas who were good at hitting the ball, but most of us were pulling like hell and without much results. You know,
sound like James's team there.
I like the cut of those fellas.
James loves those fellas, ground hurling. Come here, we'll take a quick break, and after we'll talk a little bit more.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now, you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk here on Radio Kerry Dolanbury, which is 8 o'clock this evening. Comments are flying in. This is great. Normally we have fellas giving out about Kerry midfield and Kerry corner forwards. Now they're giving out about all fellas. It's totally wrong. Donal, what a lovely show this evening, and what great stories from your panel. The Kerry Senior Hurling Championship has been a very special part of sport in this county, and a very big well done for helping us relive some of those memories. It's great to hear Tony Behan, a fabulous leader on and off the pitch. And he didn't write it himself, because he was sitting here with us, and we have him here in alibi. The Kerry Senior Hurling Championship is so hard to win, with the teams so well able for each other on any given day. And I suppose that's fairly right, Paddy. On a given day, one team can take another team out fairly quickly.
Any team can win it.
Yeah. And that's what makes it hard to win too, of course, isn't it? Like, you'll have a farm team, but you'll have a sneaky licks now there, like back in the 80s, that will take a big fellow like Causeway out in a shot.
They were sneaking out of a good team.
Sure, they were only hanging around the place too.
they were like a bit on in Causeway. They had a great goalkeeper, Johnny.
That was a good goalie. He was a brilliant goalie.
Good goalkeeper.
A great player.
He'd done any county in Ireland.
Speaking of goalkeepers, Paddy, who were the good goalkeepers through the clubs at those times?
Half myself.
You were best.
Johnny Campbell's number one.
Was he?
I was a sub goalkeeper for Kerry for about 10 years. Johnny was a keeper. I was a selector. But it was an honour to be a sub goalkeeper to him.
Wow.
Great goalie,
Was he that good?
He was big brilliant. Goalie.
Was he that good, was he?
He was brilliant.
He had
a great hand.
Yeah.
And like when the ball went in, when it went in and you were on the square, you could, all the backs had to do was keep them in out, because it's Johnny's ball in here.
And you want to watch him going, he better go now, but you want to watch him come back.
I remember playing against G1 night.
Yeah.
And
I was playing full forward. I never played full forward in my life, but I was in there that night. And Brendan Halloran was left corner. And every time the ball came in, Brendan Halloran came in and let fly. And nearly took off my head about four times. And I was saying, keep out! And eventually, I said, a ball was coming in. I said, if Brendan Halloran is here, it's too bad. And I swung at the ball. And Johnny Conway came flying out overhead to catch the ball, hit him into the jaw and broke his jaw.
Wow.
I was very sorry. I was very sorry. I genuinely was. I mean, Johnny
Conway. Well, that makes up for it. Like,
was a very nice fella. And, you know.
You heard that, Petty. He wasn't sorry. He was very sorry.
I was very sorry.
Very genuine.
No, it was Brendan Helen's fault.
Yeah. He should have been there.
And he was staying with me.
Donal, the colours and the passion at a senior hurling final outshines anything that a football one can replicate. James, we spoke about it a thousand times. There's something special about the senior hurling county championship final. We'll have the football one, and people will argue that it's better and this and that, but is it the tribalness, or is it the because you're so close to each other, or you're so related, or is it just the passion to win it because it's so hard?
It's an Arcari thing. When you go to any championship match there at the weekend, everyone in Arcari hurling is there because they're watching each other, they're watching their own team maybe, or if it's not your own team, you're there watching the rest anyway. So a county final just brings everyone out, but most of those matches I'll be there, probably all of them, the lads will probably be there, all of them, so we just go and watch each other, just to, I don't know, just to, just in case it means something, I don't know what it is, but it is like a tribal warfare really,
watching the neighbours.
But there are some great exhibitions of hurling as well. I remember being at a match that Crotty were playing in, and it was one of the days that Todd was on his game, and he was getting points from everywhere, you know, just any place he got the ball, it was over the bar, you know. And I remember a certain Crotty man on the sideline turning around to the Crotty people and saying, shouldn't that man be adored?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, some of them were. Don, I remember a few years ago managers like Eamon Cregan and Anthony Daly helping teams win county championships, but isn't it great to see Kerry managers doing so well now with clubs? Wow. So you had to sail the boat out to bring in a few. That's the end of the two of you.
I suppose, Don, look, it's like everything else. Look, you're never a prophet inside your own parish.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And that's the way it is. Like, and no matter how well you played or how well you did this or how well you do that, like, if you're taking out your own players, they probably don't have the respect for you that they would have for an outside man coming in.
Yeah.
And
it's a fresh voice, I presume, anyway,
and plus the fact, like, that the man coming in, he does his job, does his training, he's into his car, and he's out the gap.
Yes.
And the thing, there's no such thing as bickering and telling the...
If it's a
local fella, he's getting one player one day, he's probably getting the parents the next day and this thing, but the outside fella, he's complete respect, and they don't know him, so they won't approach him in the same manner as they would approach a local guy.
Mm.
But it's probably unfortunate in that, look, we know they're not doing it for nothing. Yeah. We all know that, and it's probably money the clubs could do it and things like that, and how long can they keep doing it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, look, while it's in vogue, it's going to spread, and that's it. And you have to be, if you aren't in, you just won't progress. That's it.
Come here to me. You mentioned Myler. Obviously, Daly was there as well. What kind of character was he with Kilmiley? I mean, who would
which fellow? Anthony or John Myler?
Well, John Myler's very serious man. But Anthony Daly, he rambled into Kilmiley.
He was.
Can you remember him in the dressing room?
It was just like, you're kind of awestruck at the time because he was, this is Anthony Daly, All-Ireland winning captain, and at the time he was after coming off the Clare job, they'd been beaten by Kilkenny in the All-Ireland final at that stage, and he kind of, as he said himself, he wanted somewhere not to hide, but like just to get out of Clare.
Why did he hide in Causeway, like?
Get out of Clare, really. And so he just wanted something fresh, something new. Yeah. And the boys knew him from Corson.
Oh,
he's a big Corson man, like, and they were great friends of him, like Maurice McKelligan and all the lads, and Brendan Mack and the lads, and they were talking to him, and just said, just put it to him. And you know, he even said to him afterwards himself, he's come over on the ferry, like, and it was like a breath of fresh air. Just, he was away from, like Shawnee says, he wasn't in his own parish, he wasn't in his own backyard anymore, he was down with us, and whatever he could do with us, it was just...
What was he like the first night in the dressing room? I mean, he walks in the dressing room, you're all there in your Kilmiley jerseys or whatever you have, or, you know, Man United jerseys, whatever you wear up there.
No
Man United jerseys. But like, what was the first team chat about? You know, what did he say? Did he say we want to win a championship, or was it just a bit of fun, lads, or what?
No, he was quite clear. He was kind of nearly put to him first, really, that Anthony, you're down here to win the championship. That's it. Okay. And again, he kind of, right, he took it on board, and he kind of just maybe took a couple of weeks to get used to us. But by the time he got his stamp on the team, like, then really, because Lixnaw beat us the first year he was there in 2007.
And you had Cregan that year, had you?
We had Cregan that year. Yes, yeah. We had.
I remember the photograph was kind of cool. Cregan on one side and Daly on the other side.
Actually, Daly won. I met him in Clamill one day, and he said, "He nearly destroyed my reputation. He's so and so from Lixnaw." Because I think we beat him twice, I'd say, while he was.
Yeah, we were like Lixnaw beat us in 07, we won in 08 and 09, then Lixnaw beat us in 10 again in the semi final. So, like, at the time, that kind of was 4 years ahead with us.
We were his nemesis.
Yeah, it was. He always said it afterwards. Yeah. Only for Lixnaw had a 4-0.
Oh my God. So you took a 0 off the check at the end of it, did you?
Only for Lixnaw, because we had a 5-0. So yeah.
They've a lot to answer for.
We've kept the other hurling clubs in the county.
You spoiled everything.
All the other clubs are smiling.
Abby Dorney, 74, back again. Were you training the team?
Only when the trainer wasn't there.
Which
I was captain, and Mus Mahoney was the trainer.
Okay.
And on a few evenings when he wasn't there, I...
what was training like in 74? But what was it like in 74? I mean, did you run laps
We did lots of running around the field and then sprints and that sort of thing. And as backs and forwards, as I said already, you know, maybe over... We overplayed backs and
forwards.
Did
you have your own field in 74? Were you training somewhere?
We had in 74. It was 71 at all. But it was really the GA, you know, club that bought the field, that built the sports complex there. I remember we were all up putting up blocks and things like that. I don't know how somebody didn't get killed doing it, and how the place didn't fall down. But it's still there, you know.
Still there.
And we had a bar and all in it, of course, which counteracted a lot of the training we were doing.
I'm sure the blocks were straight.
And in fact, if you were working in the bar, which I did a good bit of, you know, if you were a volunteer worker like that, which was very interesting to see people turning up for games, and it was a rainy day. Right. They might have had a runner bringing in the results of the game while they were inside swamping pints themselves. So these would be some of the mentors, you know.
There was no score. James, Kilmoyley may be top of the pile, but... Belly Duffer still the best.
Harsh.
You're after upsetting him now.
Sorry.
I can't believe, with all the fine hurlers that Abby Dorney have produced in the last 50 years, that we, so obviously he's an Abby Dorney man, have not produced a title since 74. Belly Duff, here we go, nearly scuppers that one as well, with an objection to the county board. Oh my God almighty, is there somebody out there who agrees with you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So it must be factual now. That's something
truth,
that
the truth is bitter.
The truth is bitter. Yeah. So it's a bitter lemon. Donal, will you please remember tonight Richie Purcell, Paddy Healy, and Dennis Hegarty of Kilgarvan? We do a little bit of hurling back there too.
Yes.
They have three championships.
53, 55 or 6 or 57 or 8 or around
I remember when Lixnaw didn't have a senior team actually. Lixnaw didn't have a senior team in the early 70s, and they played Kilgarvan. Kilgarvan beat them. It was the Lixnaw senior team at the time, and Kilgarvan beat them in the county final. I'd say it was about 72, because Lixnaw went... won the intermediate championship then in 73, and then Lixnaw went senior, and actually I suppose Lixnaw won the, they went to the semi-final senior championship in 74, and we won the minor championship in 74, and we won the intermediate championship in 74, and we won minor in 76. And Tony was saying there about Augie Morton. Augie actually played minor championship final against us. We played Billy Duff in the final. It was on a bit ordinary pitch in 1974.
He object.
Lixnaw, I don't object.
No, actually, he got three fabulous points from midfield. Augie did the same.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
We'll see.
He played colleges in there. Hurling as well.
Augie was a good hurler,
That's amazing. Kilgarvan, absolutely. And Kinmare, of course, down there as well.
Must be fabulous hurling.
And somebody told me tonight, don't leave out Retmore, because Retmore got to a county final some time back in 1930. You know, which North Kerry team Rob won off him back then?
Do you remember that one, Paddy?
They were in a county final when it was intermediate, was it? Retmore? 84.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know how to read a comment. And this guy says, I remember Richard Gentleman from Kilmiley. See him playing at championship matches and couldn't get over his skill. Christy Walsh was a magnificent player, always reliable. So that's obviously the Kilmiley for Richard Gentleman, do you remember him?
He was a mind player for us. He was on the foreign row team.
That's it, like.
Yeah, no, no, a great player. He was a super player for us. He was like Richard was probably. What's happening now with a lot of sweeper systems and corner forwards and players dropping back? He did it before his time. He used to play corner forward for us and played a lot of hurling midfield. So he was super for us. Massive men around the middle for us to work rate and scores he got for us. He was a huge player for us in that four in a row team.
Huge player for. He keeps mentioning the four in a row. He's sure he's five. He's four with one team and one with another team. Sure, you know.
I did myself a seven together. Yeah, and Tony, we be between the three.
The best memory I have of 74 is the bonfire that night in the village. It was right in the middle of the crossroads. And there was a woman came up the road. She wouldn't pass. She said her cap was leaking petrol. But she was the wife of a guard, sergeant actually. And she must have contacted him in Tralee, and the fire brigade came out. And if it did, they did a gentleman from Edonie, Terence Lawler, he approached the fire engine and he said, if there is as much as one hose taken off that fire engine, there'll be mutiny in Edonie. And that, he said, pull in there, he said, and he can stand guard all night. They pulled in and every one of them were pitched their own happiest too.
So, come here to me. You're listening to Terrace Talk. We're here till 8 o'clock this evening. We're going to keep the boys after 7 as well because we have plenty of good stories and loads of comments coming in as well. And if you have any comments or memories, of course, of the Senior County Championship, or maybe you've got medals, or maybe you've got more medals than these guys, send us in a comment and we'll certainly be delighted to read it out. But for now, we will take a quick break and we will head to the news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry. Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Now, you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Great show here this evening. James McCarthy from Kilmiley, Sean Flaherty, Lixnair, Paddy Walsh has dual citizenship with Abby Dorney and Cosby, and Tony Meehan is on his own with an Abby Dorney man as well. There's loads of comments coming, guys. The people are really listening now. Are you ready for a bit of criticism?
Yeah. Waiting for it.
Give it back.
Give it back. She's coming in. Well, first of all, we'll read the easy ones. A great programme on hurling this evening. Well done, Donald. Didn't know you knew that much about hurling. Well, to be honest, I know nothing about hurling. James McCarthy educated me some way out of fear mostly, but I'm getting better. Hi, Donald. Enjoying the chatting to the lads. Best of luck to all the teams in the County Hurling Championship. It's great as a neutral here to hear so much passion and cracking games of hurling. That's Charles out there in North Kerry as well. And here we go. Ooh, are you ready? Lixnair, you're okay. Kilmiley, you're grand. God almighty, you've really ruffled the crowd around the corner here tonight out in Rock Street. How can Abby Dorney say they won a county final? Here we go, Paddy. Keep the seatbelt on, will you? When Stacks got a point and the umpire signalled it wide when it was a foot inside the post.
Oh, wrong game.
Wrong game. Tell him.
Yeah. That was against Crusher.
Against Crusher.
Here we go.
Against Crusher.
Tear that one up.
Austin Stacks fan, go back.
He's back in business.
He's got the wrong. Go back to your list. The wrong game, wrong year, wrong everything. God, am I in the Licks name? I knew before you knew.
Yeah.
I knew as well.
He was holding
up. Be nice.
Dingle also got to a county final, so there we go. It's not all North Kerry. This is probably going back to
the Dingle fellas won championships.
Oh yeah, she stole the best.
And Donald, just to confirm it, I don't think 1 point would have made a difference between Abby Dorney and Stacks. It was 3-8 to 1-4 with the score.
It wrecked the momentum of the game at the time. Come here, let's go back and do a little bit more. I suppose, James, we're talking about the passion and leading into it and the whole lot. And we're trying to get, I suppose, an idea. From listening to you, we have an idea what it means to ye and people coming in, but what does it mean to your families? I mean, I go around the table, and I suppose at the time you get huge family support from your parents and your friends and your neighbours and the whole lot. But what was it like going back with number one?
I suppose it's going back to my dad now. He was he had more of a love of hurling than I did when I was a young lad, and he lived for my achievements. And you know, it was after he died, and it was just a brilliant thing that brought it back to me. And it was so, it nearly couldn't bring a tear to your eye at times. And he kind of, like, everyone said to him, did you win anything when you played hurling? And he didn't. He played in the lean years, we call it, from 72 up to 80s, when he saw everyone else win. He says, no, I never won a thing. He says, maybe in one knockout championship, because I have the next best thing. He says, I have a son who won 8. So that's huge praise from the year, and that was, he never said that to me, but it was someone else he said it to, and it came back to me, and I was saying, it's kind of like, you kind of stop you in your tracks and you say, well, that's what it meant to him.
Mm-hmm.
To me hurling, I was doing it, I was in the middle of it, I was in control of what I could do. He was a supporter on the sideline. He could control nothing. He was just watching his son, like Shawnee now, watching James playing. Like, it's very, very hard. Luckily, I have 4 daughters, and I'm kind of mad on the sideline, as you know yourself, and I'm kind of always pushing them and tell them kind of the matches, but I feel nearly as much pride when they win. My daughter won an Ireland minor there a few weeks back, and I was absolutely delighted. I was jumping the wire to get into the field after the game. They won it. Like, it's just such a different feeling. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Sean, you can come at that story both ways, I suppose. I mean, you're the son of a man who won tin. Was that discussed in the house? Did you know that, or growing up, or because he was crotted, they weren't regarded as crotted?
he was crotted living down in Nixnair, so those medals didn't count. But I suppose that when I was young, it was hurling, it was everything, because up in the morning, the hurling ball out in the field all day long. And it was at that time, my father was selected with the Kerry hurling team for about 20 years, and I went to a good few of their games. But rather than have one of the players up the country, my idol at the time was Declan Lovett, because I thought he was a fabulous player, and I saw him playing against good teams, and like, he was as good as they came. But I used to be up and down the field when I came home from the matches. I was Declan Lovett, ball stuck on the hurley, wouldn't leave it off it. I was Declan Lovett. And I suppose when you have that, like, you have that kind of a drive and an ambition, and if you have an idol, you want to try and emulate him and go as close as you possibly could to that standard. And then my brother Christy, he played with Lixnair, and it was all hurling in the house, and like football, even though I played football with CBS and things like that was in Whitfinuig, but hurling was the game, and you could go out in the field every evening and you could improve yourself as a hurler. You could never actually get to the top of it, because there was always some bit of trickery that you could do, and especially then, like, if you're my size and you come up against big guys,
6'4",
yeah, like every game you went out, like, you had to outsmart them, you had to outplay him, you had to outpace him, and you had to get the scores. And like, for a forward, it's hard to do it, but like, when the guy is a lot bigger than you, you have to be a stepper. Look, when the ball's at the other side of the field, you have to be thinking of your moves. You can't just wait, because you can't wait, you can't have it as a 50-50 situation. You know that you have to get there first, you have to get that ball in your hand first. And that's why if you're smaller, your touch has to be better, because he can make the mistake and he can put his body in and he can get the ball back. When you're light, you can't put the body in, so your first touch has to be good, and you have to get the ball the minute that ball is available, you have to grasp it. But this was okay. It all goes back to the fact that when you have the tough for the game, you always knew what you would have to do, and it was hurling, and you did it. The ball was off the wall, you broke the pane of glass, you did everything, but it was the ball. And look, I used to be sick on a Sunday evening, because there was one evening you couldn't go to the field, there'd be nobody there. And every other evening you could go, and going to the pitch, and you had the fellas that played with the 1966 team, like, they were still on the pitch when I was only a young fella going, but you could go onto the pitch and shoot for a couple of scores while you were there on your own for an hour before this. But the minute they arrived, you knew your place, back behind the goals, follow the ball for the boys. But okay, you were delighted to be there and pucking the ball out to them.
Yeah, and of course you were watching the team and the tradition and the whole acting is off the pitch.
And to see the thing, like, we had been looking, we wanted to win a championship medal, and we hadn't won one for 29 years, as I say, coming into 83. So, like, if it had gone another year, it would have been harder again. And, like, the monkey was getting heavier on the back the whole time. But we were lucky then, like, that when we did win one, we came back, we beat the semi-final in 84, and we came back, we won again in 85. But look, that 85, you got a lot of minor teams coming after that then. And we were probably the catalyst for a lot of those fellas to play the game. And then take the Paul Galvins and the Cardins, the Galvins, the Mike Conways, all that gang, they all came out, was to say, and they knew the crowd that came after them, they want to emulate them. So look, it's this wheel is going around the whole time, but success definitely breeds success, because since 83, like, we have won 7, whereas prior to that we'd only won 2.
God, you're talking up your numbers now big time, aren't you? Well, we've won nothing before.
We'll take the match, James, here, but sure, we can't do it.
But if you all join together, you probably have enough of them. Come here, Paddy, did you break many panes of glass growing up?
I did. At the gable of the house, we'd be practicing. But like that.
Where did your love of the game come from? Was it family? Was
his father's a very good hurler.
He was
the best.
He was compared to Christy Ring one time.
Tell us more.
Well, I never seen him playing, like, but he was hurling with me. He was a really tough, like, and he'd have me, oh, he's really tough. he wouldn't be hitting any easy balls, like. But, and he'd be telling me how to take a freeze, or if we're taking something else, we'd hop at a foot in front of him, and he'd be telling all them things, which we didn't do.
And do all those things, I suppose, later in life, you look back, there are fond memories to have, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where you get your first love. I mean, we're talking about fathers and
the same. Like, the only thing we had at the time was hurling, like, that's all we had. Yeah. You know, I mean, 17 or 18, 19 year old, no, they're after the pub. We didn't see a pub instead of a pub, like.
Rika Torf and a hurl.
Rika Torf and a hurl, and you'd be glad to get on the team, then you'd be fighting to get on the team. And, yeah. You know, and you'd be disappointed if you wouldn't get on the team.
Now, Tony Behan, I'm going to embarrass you now. It's not this is your life or anything correct like that, but there's one man at this table who has a proper, real All Ireland medal. Please say yes.
I've been all that in mind, a football medal, yeah.
Here we go, huh? I hear that?
60.
Yeah, and I was told that, funny enough, because I was travelling around South Kerry there and met a guy from Valencia, and there was a guy on the team for Valencia, George Corn. He played midfield.
Centre field,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, it wasn't him, obviously, it was on Woodward or his family, but that went back to the conversation about hurling and the whole lot, and of course, everything is associated. But that was a fine football team that you landed yourself on.
Well, I went to St. Brendan's in Killarney. So, you know, in St. Brendan's you played football. I played a lot of football. We got to the All-Ireland Colleges final in my year as well. We were beaten by 2 points, I think, by medals in the All-Ireland final. Shouldn't have been beaten at all, like, but we were, you know. And I mean, I have... That's one of the terrible regrets of my life, you know. I mean, losing a Colleges final is horrendous. Because you're with the same guys for 5 years, 6 now, I suppose, lots of them. But the comradeship is enormous. But we had we were very short in players. We had 15, lucky to have 15. And when people started getting injured, then we were losing out there. But we lost the final anyway. We thankfully won the minor final afterwards. Yeah.
And speak to me about winning a football. Being from Abbey Dorney, the heart of hurling and the whole lot.
Well, it's hard enough to get on the team if you're from Abbey Dorney.
I was going to say, that was my point exactly. Yeah. I mean, now we're in a situation where we have the likes of Evan Boyle, who's a fantastic footballer and a hurler, and he's captain of the Kerry Miles. But
it was certainly a lot easier to get on if you were from North to North Kerry, or if you were from West Kerry. Than it was to get
had the Irish there.
If you were from the hurling area, you were in trouble. Now, Declan Lovett got on actually in the same position the year before. This was 62. Mine was 63. Yeah. He was very. I played with Declan in again in St. Brendan's. He was 2 years ahead of me in school.
But how did it go down in hurling land that out of the blue you had a football?
Well, I was playing hurling at home as well. I played more football though, a lot more football in my younger days than in hurling.
Well, we were shutting down Paddy Corgan.
I played with my dog, and I'll tell you,
he played football.
He was the only member of the family who played with me. Except that now James plays in the hurling team.
Yeah,
he was a first cousin of mine.
Yeah,
and he was a great hurler, much better hurler than I was.
Yeah. Well, at least you played football with the dog up in Victoria.
He was fabulous dog for the job. Yeah,
good stuff. Come here. We'll take a quick break, and back after the break, we will wrap up with the boys, of course, but we will talk maybe looking ahead, maybe in hurling and where hurling has gone and all that kind of crack after the break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. Of course, we're chatting to the boys, James McCarthy, Sean Flaherty, Paddy Walsh and Tony Behan, about what it takes to win a hurling championship. They've all won one, of course. And we spoke a small bit about football, because you had to put a bit of football in being a South Kerry man. And of course, we were chatting about that minor team as well. But let's move on a small bit. A comment from a guy looking for Paddy to answer the question, Rest of you probably either take too long or wouldn't give the truth right of the time. What was it like playing without helmets?
Oh yeah.
Did you even
we
know?
We never dreamed of helmets.
Did you not? When was the first time you put... Tony Bean is showing me his head. There's a bit of a hole.
Small hole.
Yeah. James, did you have a helmet?
Yeah, we played. Yeah, we had helmets, but there was no face guard.
No face guard.
So you were the oldish helmets that were kind of cool at the time.
They were, but at least the top of the head was safe.
But there was no
face guard that time.
Okay, James, you were both sides of that, were you?
I was. Unfortunately, I have a nose to prove it. It's just been broken.
Face guard didn't come in time.
It's only they compulsory. I'd say
2010.
It's 2010.
I think Ballyduff were the first team in Kerry to win a county championship. With all helmets. With
compulsory helmets. Like.
Compulsory helmets, that's right. Yeah.
You could wear the face cap if you wanted to, but we wouldn't. We probably didn't. Just the helmet, that was it.
No, somebody told me that Timmy Weir wore a helmet in 74.
Possibly. I wore a helmet in 71, I'd say, even. This happened to me in a minor match. And I was a much better hurler before that. And I had better sight before that. And I reckon I was more intelligent before that.
We were
playing a game in Ardfert, and I was marking a fella that I'd gone to school with, who shall be nameless. And he had been a bit of a... we had kind of a feud going in primary school, and myself and this fellow, we were kind of leaders in our respective areas, but he was way stronger than I was. But I went to St. Brendan's, and I had played Froome Cup football that year, and I developed a lot, so we were playing Kilmoyle. He was playing with Kilmoyle. And
we're narrowing it down.
At the beginning of the game, he arrived down marking me. And I was feeling great. And I was nearly bigger than him at this stage. And I said, Jesus, you're going to earn your money tonight. So the first ball came and he had exactly the same thing in mind. And the next one came, he caught it and he was going to hit it. But Jack Condon came in and struck him. And he turned to Jack and then he pulled and I was on the ground. And I got to the top of the head. And the next time I woke with an Abidone jersey tied around my head in Morris Fuller's car heading for St. Catherine's.
To look at an Abidone
split.
Wow.
Yeah. Concussed split.
Jeez.
The only time I ever injured anything.
Paddy, injuries like that, did that happen a lot?
It happened in 84.
Go on, please tell us in 6 minutes or less.
I'd be short. In below in Essex Park, playing Cratta. I was unconscious for 3 hours. The ambulance had to come into the field to take me away.
Wow.
And I gave 3 days in hospital.
3 years?
What year?
84.
He remembers the year in your surgery.
84.
Were you in goal?
We made off in the final 2 weeks after.
Were you back in time for the Ballyduff game?
I was. Well, I had to. They couldn't get no one to replace me.
But after
my particular injury, after that injury, I had to wear a helmet. But there were no helmets. And Paddy's brother-in-law, Paul Bunnan,
that's right,
in Causeway, had a helmet. So if Causeway weren't playing, I borrowed Paul's helmet for all the games after that.
That helmet won a lot of matches.
And it was great.
Only for Causeway.
Yeah. That was Paul Bunnan's.
We looked after them all, but...
Yeah. And you're great neighbours, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, he arranged it.
Yeah. would that helmet have been given to Ballyduff or Kilmoyle for those, though?
It would.
Oh.
Good natured.
Well, I would give a helmet to any fella. Well, I didn't have a helmet to give. But if I had it, I'd give it to fella.
That's the thing about Knock Kerry clubs, don't you see? Without each other, there's nothing. We hate each other, but without each other, we don't have anything. There is no Knock Kerry hurling. Without, you have to have each other. Love each other, hate each other. We have to coexist. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship, really.
Sean Flaherty, another quick question for you that came in. Team talks. Who were the people in the dressing room that gave good team talks? It's now one in it, because I presume you weren't in any other dressing room.
No, I wasn't. I suppose no dressing room. Like, we had leaders on the team as well, like, and but Frank Taunton was the main man, as I said, like, and Frank was the trainer, and he was the fella that we looked up to because he had that way with him. Like, some fellas can get the best out of players, and he was one of those. Other fellas might be great trainers and things like that, but they still won't get the best. And he was one of those fellas. As I say, he had that way with him. He had he could cajole fellas that needed to be cajoled. If a fella needed a kick up the backside, he could give it to him as well. But he could do it, and he'd get away with it because fellas had respect for him. And it was basically, look, the guy that's over the team, he has to be respected by the players, because if he isn't respected, you're going no place, because they won't perform for you. And he was one of those fellas, like, we would have claimed the roof for him, like, no matter what he asked us to do, we did it. But likewise, like, if we had a problem, we went to him. If any fella did any little, look, if you said, look, I can't train tonight, I'm not feeling, no problem, if that's the way. Now, you wouldn't get away with that with most fellas that time, because to the case of, look, you're doing 15 rounds of the field. I know that I used to say to him, look, Frank, I'll do 20 sprints more, but they can't do rounds of the field. And which like a lot of fellas just can't do rounds of the field. But I was with other trainers then, and you had to do 5 or 10, and it only weakened the guys that wasn't carrying weight. And like he'd say to me, look, no, do a half round of the field there, he said, and I do maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 extra sprints. But he was the kind of fella like that would allow you to do something like that.
Paddy, Causeway 4 wins. Who was the big speaker in the dressing room at the time, Patrick?
Was he?
What did Morris bring to the game?
Morris took over the Pirate Clubs. He was
Kim Miley.
He had Lixnaw. He trained for Newington All Ireland Junior Football. He was brilliant, like, and he was a good man to give a pep talk before the game. And the players respected him, like we were talking a while ago about outside trainers having, the players having more respect for him. Everyone had respect for Morris. Whatever he had in his mind, you know, but they had respect for him, like.
And he proved it. Tony, how important is that role to have, kind of, we were talking about managers and trainers, and I suppose back in the day it was just the guy in charge of the team or picked the team or he helped out. Now there's back rooms of 20 fellas and the whole lot, but the essence is still the same. To get that connection with the player is so important.
It is absolutely. And I remember doing a few speeches before games, and an interesting one was our own curate at home at the time, Father McKenna. Father McKenna was a fabulous priest and a tremendous man for Abidorney. And before the match, he said to me, he said, you go in there, he said, and tell him, you know. And he said, and you can, you know, use a few Fs.
Holy words, yeah.
What he didn't, and I mean, it was surprising, like, coming from him, you know. What he didn't know was that I was using a whole encyclopedia of expletives before every match. And the reaction was the funniest part if you were giving it.
Yes.
Because some fellas, like, so Jack again, Jack Condon, Jack would be, you know, when he'd be giving the speech, he'd be going out to the roof, like. Yeah. He'd be clinging off the roof till he'd be so wound up. But then you looked up at Brendan Keane and he looked at you and was just saying, are you some kind of a fool or something? You know? So you got different reactions. Brendan, like, was a purist. It was hurling. It wasn't, you know, he didn't like fellas getting the ball rived up and mulking into him. Yeah. He didn't like that at all, you know.
Everybody's different, every player's different, of course. I suppose it goes back to the man management of your buddy Tartan.
But can I say something about Abidorney before we finish, though? You've probably read Forging a Kingdom.
Yes.
Right. And you read Richard McKelligus.
Yes, his history book, yeah.
You know that the first hurling match that was played in Ireland under the auspices of the GAA was played in a place called a Hamor.
Okay.
And a Hamor is in Abidorney parish. I don't know where the match was played, but it was between Abidorney and Killahan against Killoury and Rattoo. And it was played just after the GAA had been founded, and when Cusick came to Tully to object to the match and to boycott the game that was taking place up in the park at the time. Interesting thing, you could probably get him to talk to you about this. And of course the first championship
match, I saw played out from hurling now.
the first championship match that was played in Kerry was played between Abidorney and Ballyduff. It was probably a follow on from this game, and it was played in
No helmets.
I think there were actually 25 aside in it, but Abidorney won by a disputed point.
Oh my god, yeah. Well, listen, guys, it's been massive fun. I have to wrap up, otherwise we'll be here all night and day. And they see the guy inside here now, you can blame him, he's from Kilmiley, he doesn't want any of this crack going on, the sound men. But listen, it's been great fun. Very quick question, and literally 15 seconds each. Do you miss hurling, Paddy?
Yeah.
What do you miss most about it?
I love to go back to hurling. I even said it yesterday after watching the hurling.
Yeah.
I would love to go back pen holding again.
Yeah, James, you're still playing, so we want to ask you. But do you still play a bit? Do you bring out the hurling puck around?
I don't know, but looking at the pitches nowadays, I'd love to be playing now because the lively pitch when we played, the pitches were dead, they were heavy, they weren't conducive to good hurling up to speed or anything like that. Whereas now it's all about first touch and speed, and the pitches are primarily responsible for that. I'd say so. It would be lovely to play now. Yes,
to suit a man of your stature now.
that's what I was hoping it would do.
Good stuff. Well, listen, guys, thanks very much. And of course, you've been listening this evening to Paddy Walsh of Causeway, who's won 5, one with Abbey Dorney and 4 with Causeway. And of course, the one with Abbey Dorney is worth about 10 because they only win them every 60 years. So that's a big one. Tony Behan, thanks very much. Delighted to have you on
this
evening.
We're going very well this year now. We've won the North Kerry League and the County League, and they're playing good hurling.
You're dead right, James. They win a league, and this is what turns out. Yeah, and you've got a very handy group, James McCarthy told you. If you were listening to us. The senior county championship, of course, it kicks off Friday. Ballyhaig, of course, are in action against Ballydough on Friday evening, the 16th at 7:30 in Ossensack Park. And then on Saturday, Abbey Dorney are taking on Dr. Crokes. Mahoney in charge, my God, a big manager and a big team. And that's 5 p.m. in Ossensack Park. And Kilmiley, most people's favourites, apart from James's, we're taking on Causeway, the champions, on Saturday as well at 7 p.m. in Ossensack Park. And listen, get along and watch those games and support your team. Guys, it was great fun this evening. We might actually do something like this again. You never know, we might be able to find some more people that can do it. We take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now it's time to tune into our Kerry Women in Sport production. As a fabulous production, has been running 3 weeks with us here on Terrace Talk, produced by Joe McGill, of course, and Connie Broderick. Tonight's episode, of course, we're all going to be listening to this one because you hear the story of File Moore's runner, Grace Lynch, who's a neighbour, of course, just back the road and a friend of the show. She's been on a good few times. And Grace, of course, is a distance runner who has represented Ireland, specialising in distances ranging from 5 kilometres to marathons. And this is her story.
This documentary was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
It's kind of a unique story in a way, coming from, you know, a small girl in South Kerry to where I am now today, living in Dublin and representing Ireland. It's great because I feel like, you know, I was never, I suppose, you wouldn't have picked me out at a young age and said, oh, she's going to run for Ireland, you know. People probably never thought that, whereas it just shows that, you know, a little bit of determination and motivation can really get you a long way.
In this episode of Kerry Women in Sport, we hear the story of runner Grace Lynch. Grace is a distance runner specialising in distances ranging from 5K to marathons. Having represented Ireland both nationally and internationally, Grace competed in her debut marathon at the BMW Berlin Marathon in 2021. The South Kerry native is a member of the ASICS Frontrunner UK and Ireland team. She is a qualified sport and exercise scientist, neuromuscular physical therapist, an endurance coach, and works as a regional development officer for Athletics Ireland. This is her story.
So Grace Lynch, and I'm from Dunedin, Castlefiane, County Kerry. To be honest, growing up down in South Kerry, I feel like, you know, it's obviously quite rural, and we're all kind of ingrained in sport from a very young age. So I suppose training up my sister actually was the first kind of key memory that I had, just training together on the farm, actually going out for runs. And then I joined my local athletics club, Uvra Athletics. So it all kind of blossomed from there. I suppose I kept going, you know, through secondary school, primary school, secondary school, and then really started to push on when I went to university then.
Grace's first cousin is Kerry senior footballer Graham O'Sullivan. And growing up, Grace's immediate family were also very much into sport.
I suppose my dad would have always been involved in sport. He would have been involved in kind of the local running club as well when he was younger. And he actually cycles quite a lot now. He'd easily go out and probably cycle during a Kerry on a Sunday. He's done it a couple of times. So he's fantastic, and he was great, I suppose, role model for me growing up. But yeah, like my family, you know, we would have grown up on a farm, so we would always been quite active when we were younger. So there was always that element of being out and being fit and just enjoying, I suppose, the outdoors. My sister would have been running, and I would have looked up to her quite a lot. So she would have kind of been, I suppose, the big influence on me at the time. And then when we joined our athletics club, Larkin Murphy would have been the coach there. So he would have been training us over the water pitch then in Carsfine during the week.
So why did Grace take to running as opposed to other sports?
I suppose I was just doing it for the love of the sport. Like, I really enjoyed it. It was a great outlet for me. And I suppose a lot of the girls that I went to school with at the time would have been involved in GAA. And I did give that a go for a bit. But I think, you know, it didn't really lend to my personality. I feel like the running really kind of lent into my personality traits and suited me a lot better. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed it, loved doing it. And it just kind of, my passion for it grew from there.
The traits to being a successful runner are often traits that one draws on to be successful in life.
I think, like, as a runner, you kind of have to be quite, like, self-motivated, disciplined in what you do. And I suppose, like, the nature of running is it's quite a solitary sport. You know, you are out there a lot by yourself. And I suppose I was able to, you know, I felt like I didn't need someone to tell me to go out and train. Like, I was happy to go out and do it myself. So I suppose having those kind of characteristics, you know, it lends into, I suppose, you progressing as a runner then. And, like, it does kind of lead into different aspects of life. Like, I would have been, I suppose, a high achiever in school, and, you know, I work full time as well right now. So trying to train at a high level and work full time, it's definitely a balancing act. But I think sometimes you kind of you see yourself in you know, one area in life really trying to achieve, and then, you know, I'm trying to achieve a lot through running as well. So probably something that I need to, you know, make a decision on if I really want to push through later in life. But yeah, no, it definitely transfers over to lots of other aspects.
When Grace grew up, she continued to compete as her love for the sport developed.
Like, when I started out, I suppose throughout secondary school, like, I would have been competing, say, for the club at county level and Munster level as well. I suppose with the school then as well, we would have competed at schools, cross country. I did a little bit of track, but I suppose cross country would have been, I suppose, more what I was comfortable at. I suppose our closest track really was Unreacht, which would have been like an hour drive away. I remember when we were younger, we used to go up maybe once a week to Reacht, drive 2 hours up and down. So it was a big commitment even for my parents. They were so great that way. But yeah, so it would have been kind of county level, and then it wasn't really until I went to kind of university that I started to, you know, do some road races and do some university races as well, and kind of dip my toe into other areas. Like, to be honest, when I went to college, it was probably like the big aspect of that kind of part of my life where it really helped me to make new friends. It really got me, I suppose, out of my comfort zone, really. You know, you have to put yourself out there and, you know, create new connections. And, like, I had to join the university athletics team, but it brought with that, you know, so many different experiences, so many new people, and it helped me as well, I think, you know, with my own self-progression as a person. It helped me quite a lot. So it was definitely something that was always going to be, like, a huge part of my life and something that I loved to do. So there was never really a question of, oh, will I not do this? So it was always there.
Grace's most memorable success came as a teenager in a Munster competition, and this spurred her on to achieve more success.
I remember I went up to a Munster cross country, I think it was Limerick Racecourse we were on, and I remember going out that day and thinking, okay, if I could get maybe the top 20, and I ended up coming in fourth. And I was absolutely thrilled with myself. absolutely delighted to come forth at the Munster Cross Country Championships. And I think that was probably, like, my first kind of moment where I was like, oh, maybe if I keep going that I could actually, you know, get a little bit better. And it gave me that kind of insight into what it felt like to maybe do well. Because I would have always been, you know, competing and taking part, but, like, never meddling or anything like that. So I suppose that was my first real insight into maybe getting close to winning something.
When Grace got to college, she began to take her running career really seriously.
So our college coach at the time approached it very scientifically, and it was my first experience of that. In college, I was actually studying sports science as well. So kind of between those two things, I really, you know, looked at the science of running, really, I suppose, went deep into that and how I could improve through S&C, through recovery, through proper training. So that for me was, I suppose, the moment when I started to really progress on and take it, like, quite seriously. And then I think after leaving college, I started working with my current coach, Emmett Dunleavy. So that for me was the kind of key, I suppose, moment where, yeah, I was like, I really want to give this a go and see where I can go with this.
And what makes your current coach so good?
But to be honest, we probably just have, like, a really good coach and athlete relationship. You know, we've got a great group up in Dublin at the moment that we train together on Tuesday nights and at the weekend as well. So just having that, like, group environment, you know, of a lot of people trying to achieve the same thing really, you know, but all individuals at the same time. So having that environment is fantastic. And I think the big thing with Emmett that I really appreciate is he's a brilliant coach, and like if I go out and if I, you know, blow our expectations out of the water in a race, you know, he'll just say, okay, that was good. That was good. But like there'll be no praise, and you know, it keeps you quite humble, keeps your feet on the ground, and I think that's what keeps me progressing as well.
After college, Grace started to compete at various distances as she continued to push the boundaries and achieve her potential.
Yeah, so I suppose after college I started transitioning into kind of like, say, 5k road races, 10k road races. And then it wasn't really until maybe the year before lockdown that I started doing 10 milers, things like that, started upping the distance a little bit more. And then, of course, COVID came. And that actually kind of gave us a great opportunity to take a step back and see, you know, let's have a look at some marathon type training. I did a little bit of that, see if it suited me, see if it suited, I suppose, my body as well at the time, you know, if I was able to take the load of it. So that was a great learning experience, and like that kind of started to push us towards the longer side of things. And then decided to do my first marathon then in 2021.
So what was it like training and participating in a first marathon?
It was a whole host of different emotions. I loved the training for it. It really suited me as an athlete. It really suited my physiology as well. I have more of an engine. I don't really have like mad speed, but I have a great engine. So it definitely suited me as a person. I really, really enjoyed the training. I suppose the actual race day, you know, there was, you know, so many unknowns, I suppose you could say. So there was a lot of nervousness going into that race because, you know, it is 26 miles and you just don't know what can happen on race day. And I suppose the thing with marathon training is you have to put in so much training and it all goes into this one day. You know, and if the day doesn't go well, you know, it's not like I can hop into another marathon a week later. So I suppose there is that element of pressure as well, that like everything kind of needs to go right in the day. So yeah, it was a unique experience for my first one. I did it in Berlin, but it was fantastic. I absolutely loved it and kind of knew coming away from that race that, you know, this is something I could potentially be really good at, and I just really loved it.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk, and of course some great comments coming in there for Grace Lynch, and we'll read those out at the end of the show maybe, but for now we return to part two.
You're listening to an episode of Kerry Women in Sport, where we hear the story of runner Grace Lynch. Throughout her career, Grace has represented Ireland at various levels.
I represented Ireland, I suppose my first time ever would have been kind of underage at a cross-country event. So that was Celtic cross-country, I'm trying to remember what year it was. Maybe I was 2021 at the time. So that was my first one. And then after that, it would have been, I represented again at the Armagh International 3K Road Race. So that would have been probably in 2018. And then just last year gone, I represented at the European 10K Cup in Pace in France. So I suppose like last year would have been kind of going off my half marathon timings from Berlin. So I ran the standard for Pace in that race. So yeah, it's been great to, you know, wear, I suppose, the Irish singlet, and it's something that like I hope to do again in the future. And something I suppose that keeps me motivated and striving forwards.
Representing Ireland fills Grace with a real sense of pride.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, it's kind of a unique story in a way, coming from, you know, a girl in South Kerry to where I am now today, living in Dublin and representing Ireland. It's great because I feel like, you know, I was never, I suppose, you wouldn't have picked me out at a young age and said, oh, she's going to run for Ireland. You know, people probably never thought that. Whereas it just shows that, you know, a little bit of determination and motivation can really get you a long way. So that's kind of what I love to say to people as well.
To be a marathon runner is no mean feat. And to be a competitive one requires great discipline and tolerance for pain. So does Grace embrace the punishment that comes with being a marathon runner?
To a degree, I suppose, yeah. yeah, there's definitely that side to it, you know. Like this Friday now, I have to head out and do an 80 miler. Some people probably think I'm a bit mad, but you know, I suppose you know, every sport has its individual aspects, and you know, I suppose every sports person or athlete or anyone who just runs in general, you know, I suppose you know what has to go into it, and you can kind of understand and relate to that. So yeah, I suppose we do like a bit of punishment, but I suppose it's all part and parcel of it as well.
To train for a marathon doesn't happen overnight, and it takes years to build up the endurance that's needed to compete.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, even with Emmett, like, you know, like I've been working with him now for 4 years, and he probably knew about 2 years ago that like I was tracking towards the longer distances. But you know, again, like so many years of work really goes into, you know, getting yourself to the start line fit and healthy. And you know, it is a long road, but I think, you know, you get so much out of it on so many different levels in life. So I think that in itself is a great thing.
Grace has been able to bring her love of running into her professional career, and her day job involves working with Athletics Ireland.
Currently, I'm a regional development officer. So my work and my life revolves around running. But basically, I look after the clubs in Meath, Kildare and Wicklow. So between club development and coach education. So I would be kind of organising all the coach education workshops. We have kind of 3 foundation level courses, and then you got your level 1, level 2 and level 3. So yeah, I'm kind of, I suppose, the person that those clubs would go to if they're looking for help, if they're looking for education or any help at all with their development of their club.
The development of athletics and the knowledge sharing around it has improved a lot since Grace was growing up.
You know, our own club down in South Kerry, Ivora, you know, they did loads for me as I was growing up. But you know, I think things have progressed on quite a lot in the last number of years. You know, there's a lot more being done for athletes, whether that's online webinars, nutrition talks, S&C, even our regional development squads, so for up and coming athletes. And I think there's a lot more that we can do in that area, you know, for those athletes who might be on the fringes of making an Irish team, or might be on the fringes of, you know, making a Munster team. So I suppose helping them and giving them the resources that they need, because, you know, I suppose that's the one thing with running, there's not a lot of support and resources out there for people. So providing them with that can make a huge impact and maybe bring someone through that maybe they may not have come through otherwise.
Along with everything else, Grace is a member of the ASICS Frontrunner UK and Ireland team. So what does this involve?
So basically, I'm part of the ASICS Frontrunner team for the UK and Ireland. So basically, it's, I suppose, a programme that, you know, I suppose heighten awareness of the brand. But the big thing with our group that we're involved in, it's all about, you know, what running has brought to us, and the fact that, you know, so many people from diverse backgrounds can come together and enjoy just the pure essence of running, and what that has given to so many of the people in the group, whether, you know, it's brought them through difficult times, or, you know, if they are just purely in it for the competitive sense. But it's fantastic, you know, it's brought me to loads of different events throughout, I suppose, the world now at this stage. And like, we meet up probably twice a year and have kind of, I suppose, a weekend based around workshops and running and just celebrating it for what it is.
So what is Grace's proudest achievement at senior level been?
I think for me, it would probably be, you know, I suppose if you're going off races, it probably would have been Berlin Half Marathon that I competed in last year. I think it was a big moment for me because I really, I suppose, went beyond what I kind of expected from myself that day. And it kind of opened up a new realm to me, and about, you know, what your mind can achieve. You know, your body might be telling you, okay, you're going to run 75 minutes today, but I ended up running 73.50. And I think, you know, that showed to me that the mind is a huge aspect as well when it comes to running, and believing in yourself and having that confidence to, you know, push when the going gets tough, and believing that your body can do it. So I think for me, that was like a huge moment for myself, and I was quite proud of that. I suppose, you know, if you're not looking at competition wise, I think it's just, you know, having the energy and the motivation to stay within this sport and believe in myself, even when maybe, you know, things are pointing the other way. You know, I could have, I suppose, stepped away from the sport, but I'm proud that I stayed in it, and I'm proud that I backed myself and got myself to where I am now.
If you compete at Grace's level, injuries are part and parcel of the journey. So how does she deal with those setbacks?
Yeah, I've been quite lucky, to be fair. I haven't had anything like very bad. I've had one or two kind of, I suppose, we'll say significant ones where I was out of running for maybe 6 or 7 weeks. So I think, you know, they are definitely part and parcel of it. And the way I like to look at injuries and setbacks is, you know, there are opportunities to learn something about yourself. So whether that's, okay, you have a weakness in this hip that you need to work on, and if you work on this now, you're going to come back way stronger. Or, you know, if it was an overuse injury, you know, maybe you approached training the wrong way. So again, I always try and, you know, flip it around and say, okay, look, this is a learning opportunity for me right now, and I can apply this to my training in the future, and hopefully this won't happen again. So yeah, looking at it in a positive way as much as you can. I know injuries are really tough, and all athletes, I suppose, deal with them, but yeah, they can be viewed in a positive way, I think.
In recent years, there have been significant gains for Irish athletics.
It's actually incredible, like, you know, going off, I suppose, our major championships last year. You know, people like Israel Alatunde and like they're just incredible. You know, there's so much talent coming up. And even I was actually on a camp with, so we have this group in Athletics Ireland called the Pathway Performance Group. So they're kind of our under 18 to under 20 athletes, and just the amount of talent is just incredible. So it's a really exciting time for athletics. You know, we have people like Ciara McGeehan as well, who's absolutely on the world stage and had like the season of her life last year. So it's just really exciting as well for our younger athletes to see all of these people coming through and doing so well. I think like when you have those people to look up to, and like even, you know, for the younger kids, like I know some of them would be going into the indoor arena in Dublin and seeing, you know, some of our current Olympians training inside there. Like that's hugely inspiring and motivating for them. You know, it just shows them that, you know, she was like me one day and now she's there. So I think having that is really brilliant for our younger athletes.
And what's it like for female athletes in the sport? Is it a level playing field for all?
Yeah, no, I definitely think, you know, huge, I suppose, movements have been made in the last few years as well. Like we have our own officer for women in sport now within Athletics Ireland, Liliana Hora. So I work quite closely with her as well. So she's doing fantastic work for women in sport. But I think that's one thing that's actually really unique about athletics. You know, I know there are some sports where it's not really a level playing field and, you know, males might be paid more than females. Whereas with athletics, you know, prize money and everything, it's quite equal between the two genders, which is great, I think. So, you know, having that, I suppose, being involved in a sport from a young age that does support that, I think it's brilliant, yeah.
So what are Grace's hopes for the future?
For me, going forwards, you know, I think the marathon is kind of where it's at for me. I've only done two so far and, you know, they've both gone quite well for me, thank God. Because I know some people don't have great experiences for their first one. So for me, I just want to keep pushing my own boundaries and keep moving forwards within the marathon distance and see where I can go. I'm actually competing in Barcelona in 3 weeks' time in the half marathon there. So hopefully put down a PB performance out there again and yeah, see where that takes me. Hopefully it'll open up some doors into maybe some more Irish singlets in the future. But yeah, I think, you know, I suppose the sky's the limit. You only put your own limits on yourself, so hopefully if I just keep pushing and see where it goes.
So when she finishes competing in many years' time, will she continue to be involved?
Yeah, I think I will be, to be honest. I suppose unless injury comes at me, I think I'll always be involved in it in some shape or form. And you know, even my coach now, he was a runner in, he still runs, but he was, you know, really actively running in the past as well, and now I can see what he's doing with the fantastic group that he has. So hopefully that might be, you know, in my realm someday as well. But yeah, I'll definitely always be involved.
So there you go, Grace Lynch wraps up the show this evening. One quick comment that came in about Grace: it was fabulous to have such an ambassador on the show this evening. Well done to Radio Kerry, well done to Joe McGill, that's fabulous stuff. And a big well done to all our Kerry hurlers that were in, and we'll be getting to see the hunt for the new county championship, of course, Friday evening. Get down to Ossensack Park, and of course two games on Saturday as well. And of course Kerry versus Loud, are you on the car up to Port Leash? Hopefully you will, because you'll only be able to hear on Radio Kerry, not on television. So get tuned in and we'll do all this again next week. Up next is Talk Sus. Big thanks to Ivan and Keane on sound.